Welcome back to the Buffalo Bread Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Roberts. We are here at the bye week for the Buffalo Bills, putting together quite a bit of guest host content for you all as the Bills take a much-needed break from losing football. Our guest today, though, is not familiar with losing football recently. That is when Brandon Bennett, our resident friend of the pod, not friend of the Bills, our Patriots expert, he has come on the pod to brag a little bit about his first place Pats. All us Bills fans, suckers forever believing that we could run it back like we did last year. Brandon, right off the top, man, how dare you, sir? How dare you guys find a quarterback this good, this close to the close of the Tom Brady era? That's all I wanted to say. Pod over. What's up, man? How you doing today?
Good. I'm really good. As a Patriots fan, probably, you know, the best I've been in quite some time. So
yeah, I really listen, man, you guys deserved a drought like the Bills had a drought for all those years back in the day. And it looks like you're going to avoid it. Congratulations to you. But in all seriousness, I was watching that Bills game. I was over at your house. I was watching that Bills game and I thought a couple of things. And this is one I want to bring you on the pod. I want to kind of test them with you, right? To see if my instincts were correct. Number one, Drake May's arrival has happened, I think, ahead of schedule, and he has skipped some of the growing pains that second year QBs and young QBs go through. And that is making the dumb mistakes downfield. He did that some last year, but he hasn't done any of that, putting the ball in danger this year. Next, Mike Vrabel. We're going to talk about him too. I think, and I'm going to get your take on this later on, I think you guys might have the best coach in the AFC East right now. You guys already might have the best coach in the division after just 6 weeks, and we'll dig into that a little bit too. And then third, your guys' defense, man, the way you guys can stop the run when so few teams can, but then you also have two corners on the back end that can hold up. You guys got a lot of things going for you, not to mention the easy schedule to close out the year. I mean, playoffs seem not inevitable to you guys, but high probability, right? So where do you want to start? You want to start with your general vibes on the team? Do you want to dive right into gushing over Drake May? You tell me where you want to steer this ship, sir. You are in first place after all, so you get to call the shot.
Why don't we start with Vrabel and how Vrabel is settling into his new role back on the Patriots now as the head coach. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are I do believe he is the best coach in that division. And this is not going to turn into some Fire McDermott rant. But when you look at the totality of what he brings, you look at the ability to craft culture. You look at the ability to influence an organization, to build a staff. But then you look at just what always feels like game after game, impeccable in-game decisions, always managing to pull the right levers, always managing to make the right fourth down call, right? Always managing to make sure that there are not 12 guys on the field, there are 11 guys on the field, and making sure his staff is up to the task. The discipline, the culture building, the organization building, he just feels like the total package. And when you juxtapose that with the organization that sent him to the sidewalk in Tennessee and the turmoil they're going through, not only does that look like an insanely rash move on their part to get rid of him, but it is like the boon of the century for you guys then to be able to pick that up, bring it in to a culture that already had a reputation. And somehow, this is the most amazing thing, that culture doesn't feel like a Belichick culture anymore, which is insane to say for a coach that was there for 20 years, that the residue of the previous head coach is not still on that organization. Like this is Vrabel's organization after 6 weeks. And that to me is the most amazing piece of it. What's your take?
Yeah. So my take is I feel like these days there are a handful of coaching archetypes in the NFL. I feel like you have your young, quirky, kind of nerdy coaches.
McDaniel.
Yeah. And then you have sort of this older generation of very serious coaches that, you know, always are kind of mean mugging on the sideline and, you know,
Todd Bowles.
Yes.
Todd Bowles,
yes,
in Tampa Bay.
Exactly. Yep. I don't know why I'm blanking on his name, but the coach of the Broncos right now, who was a long time
Sean
coach.
Payton.
Yeah, Sean Payton. Sean like, Payton. He's that archetype of, like, grumpy old dude, just, like, always mad on the sideline. And that brings me to the next archetype, which I think is former players that are maybe not the best coaches, but are great leaders of men. And mm-hmm. so I put Vrabel in a category with Dan Campbell,
yeah,
as just like a good leader of men. Like, Vrabel physically is a big guy, like, pretty intimidating guy. You know, they show these clips of him kind of out there, getting scruffy with some of the players, holding a pad, all that sort of stuff. And I think it's that sort of mentality that has allowed him to rally these players behind him and see the success that they're seeing on the field. I think, you know, I had some skepticism when the season started. I think that Las Vegas game was one that the Patriots should have won, but they've quickly turned it around. And I think this is probably a natural segue to talking about Drake May, who, as a fan, I'm just so happy to be watching good football on the Patriots again. Because it's been really bad for several years. Seeing the way that he extends plays, the accuracy, oh my God, the accuracy. He's
crazy.
He's been, if not the most, I think.
Second most. He's behind Dak.
Yes, thank you. So, second most accurate quarterback. So, love to see those completions, you know, happening through the air. This is not all ground game, which when Vrabel arrived, after what he did with Derrick Henry, I think some, you know, thoughts there of like, okay, this is going to be a super run heavy offense. But then they did all these moves in the offseason, picking up these receivers, Diggs, Mac Hollins, folks that your listeners are very familiar with, picking up Kyle Williams in the draft, who we haven't seen a whole lot of yet. But yeah, no, it's been a really fun ride so far. And you mentioned playoffs, so, you know, it's still really early. We're only heading into week 7 here. But I hope that remains a possibility.
I don't want to jinx you guys, but it feels like a very attainable reality. And listen, for the record, even in the last years of the Belichick McCorkle era, I was constantly smashing the, I literally put down and lost money on betting your guys over on the win total, right? Year after year post Tom Brady. Part of it was trauma betting because, like, I've never known a Patriots team to not be good. So part of it was that, right? But you guys have so much stuff that you've done that feels real. And there is this caveat to Drake May's performance that I know is out there on the interwebs, and some media personalities have brought it up, that he hasn't played a real defense yet. Well, there are not a lot of real defenses in the NFL, and it just so happens that one of the few real defenses out there is on the New England Patriots, so he's never going to face anything that good. You know what I mean? I think the toughest test is very likely going to be Tampa Bay. But from a defensive standpoint, but even they can be had over the middle of the field with that linebacker core. I mean, I think Atlanta, I think you guys, you're not going to be as susceptible to the blitz as we were for a lot of different reasons, mostly because you're not going to be stupid and keep your best offensive weapons on the bench while you watch your franchise quarterback flounder against a 6-man rush. But I think even Atlanta, you guys are going to have the ability to handle that defense a little bit better. You know, so I think there's a lot of stuff that just feels real and sticky for you guys. It starts with Drake May, and it really kind of ends with him too. And I, listen, McDaniels is your guy's play caller, has not done anything completely out of pocket, hasn't done anything super innovative or creative, but we know he's got that in his bag for later on down the season in case he needs to. So all the more reason, I think, for you to feel great, because May has developed to this extent so quickly. It hasn't been because of a lot of funky stuff going on with the scheme, trying to spam easy button things for him. They're rolling out the concepts that they're rolling out. May is hitting them. He's hitting them at a high level with great efficiency, great accuracy, but also just mental clarity. He's just not making a lot of dumb mistakes that tank sophomore seasons for a lot of second year QBs. So there's a lot here that's in your guys' favor, and it makes me really angry to say that.
Yeah. They look good. If I could offer a frustration, it's been to this point the utilization of Travion Henderson and what I would characterize as a really faulty over-reliance on Ramondre Stevenson.
Stubborn. It feels stubborn, doesn't it?
Yeah, and nonsensical, to be honest. You have this rookie who I think has all the trappings of a potential superstar, and is just being limited. And, in the Ramondre game where he fumbled pretty early on in the game, right back out there and getting the goal line touches. And I feel as though that's got to be earned. Like, what message did you send to Ramondre Stevenson when he yet again fumbled a ball that then led to a score, and you said, no worries, big guy, we'll get you the same allotment of snaps and get you those goal line carries. He scored 2 touchdowns that game. So, is that part of the strategy of like, okay, we're not going to beat this guy down. He's going to beat himself up. So let's give him the opportunities. But then we're not seeing enough, in my opinion, of Travion Henderson, who they spent quite a bit of draft capital to acquire. Back to the playoffs discussion, if this team is going to continue to grow and evolve over the course of the season and win games, I think they're going to have to get him involved more. I think they're going to have to get Kyle Williams involved more, see some flashes of what these younger guys can do, because they're the future of this team, right? Is this a Super Bowl team this season? Nuh-uh. Like, that ain't going to happen. We know that. But we got to see what those guys can do, and we haven't yet. So
I agree. And as we're talking playoffs, you have not yet had the joy of playoff Stefon Diggs, where he disappears for long stretches at a time and is rendered usually ineffective. So I do think it's wise for you guys to work in some of these other weapons. On the Stefon Diggs topic, I want to talk about that a little bit. It feels like he purposefully signed with you guys just to stick it to us for 2 games out of the year. Like, it feels like that dude's got a big axe to grind, because he what, goes off for 149 yards against the Bills, then has like 11 yards the next week against New Orleans. I mean, it's like, come on, man.
His performance seemed really personal.
It sure did. I don't know what really Trey personal. White did to him, but he made Trey look ridiculous.
There, and I hope, Dan, you're okay with me saying this, but there was a point where you and I were having a conversation, and you bet what most men would view as a very valuable body part that the Buffalo Bills would not get rid of Diggs. And then it happened. Did. And now he's a Patriot.
It's wild.
And seemingly very healthy when it comes to playing the Bills.
Yes. Well, and listen, I have a take on this, if you'll allow me the runway to do this, right? Because it has to do with a player who both of our teams have shared in Stefon Diggs. Like, watching Diggs constantly break open during the Drake May scramble drills, right? Josh Allen to the right, scrambling to the right for so long, was undefeated. Why? Because he had Stefon Diggs down there. to watch Drake May on our field scramble to the same right sideline, the right hash marks, like Josh Allen did back when him and Diggs were playing together, and then find Diggs in a Patriots uniform down the field. Not only was it like this wave of very bittersweet nostalgia, but I had a thought in my brain too. And listen, I love this team. I want this team to win a Super Bowl. But the reality is this is the last season that Josh is in his 20s. And we know that time comes for everybody very quickly. You and I are two gentlemen of advanced age. We know that time comes for everyone inevitably. And as I was sitting there watching May launch ball after ball at Stephon Diggs during scramble drills, I had this one thought in my head. If for whatever reason, the Bills do not capitalize on this generational talent that they have found and developed at QB, if they don't capitalize and win a Super Bowl, it is going to be wild to think that a big reason why that could be is I watch the ease of Drake May finding Stephon Diggs versus how difficult it was for Josh Allen to find anybody open on his scramble drills in that game. It's going to be interesting to think that part of the reason they didn't capitalize on that was because they couldn't keep the Allen Diggs thing together longer, right? Yeah, it's just wild. It's just wild to think about. But, You know, you guys got him now, and to hell with you guys. That's all I got to say. Can we talk about go back to the Travion Henderson thing really quick? I think you bring up a good point. I think though, and this is the one of the many shortcomings of McDaniels as a play caller. He's not as creative as a lot of guys are in the modern game right now, but he's good. He's solid. He's stable. You know what the floor is going to be on his scheme, but I think he's also committed to his ways, and he's never had a running back rotation less than three guys. So like, this is something I do think based on his play calling history, he bakes into the formula. Like, he's going to want to spread the ball around to a stable of running backs. I agree with you. I think Henderson should easily be the featured back there. And now with Gibson's on IR at this point, right?
Yeah. He's super out with ankle injury.
With Gibson on IR, one would think that would potentially change that calculus for McDaniels. But at the end of the day, this is a dude who has always, always called the run game the way he's called it. And I don't know that there's a lot of innovation or a higher ceiling you guys are going to hit than where you're at now. And while the offensive lines have been improved, hasn't been super awesome in the run game for you guys either. So I think he feels like he's working around some limitations, but he's also clamped down to his tendencies as well. So I would like to see Henderson hit, but I don't know if it's going to be this year.
I feel like there's so much potential for, again, I'm going to draw a Detroit Lions comparison, but for that 1-2 punch that we see Detroit doing with Gibbs and Montgomery, where Montgomery's your up the gut, hard runner, heavier. And then, you know, Gibbs is your pass catching, elusive, speedy, around the edges, can beat guys on his feet type of player. And, you know, I could see that with Henderson and Stevenson. I just, you know, to your point, I don't think it's going to happen that way. I think it's going to take, you know, unfortunately, a Ramondre injury to see Henderson getting more snaps and more opportunities. And that'll probably happen because Ramondre is an older back. You know, he's been around for a while. He has this fumbling problem. And so I think it's going to come at some point in this season. It's just that, like, impatience as a fan waiting for Henderson to get those opportunities.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the Buffalo Bills, as fans, we have had similar experiences rooting for what we feel like is our best back to get on the field. We had them recently in the Atlanta game. We were like, why is James Cook playing less than 50% of the snaps? So sometimes, you know, coaches just don't learn. Let's talk trade deadline really quick, because you guys are in a position, depending on how things go with Tennessee this weekend, to really control your own destiny in the division. And while you guys are sound, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, there are definitely, I think, some additions you guys could stand to make. So are there any trade deadline crushes you have, any positions of need you hope you guys address? Like, what are you hoping the strategy is here after the Tennessee game?
Yeah, that's tough. I feel like the weapons on like the wide receiver room is there's a lot of depth there. Gibson just went down. So is there, you know, the possibility that they pick up another back? What I ultimately would like to see is a little bit more beef and talent in the O-line. Drake May has shown his scramble ability. You know, he's pretty good on his feet, extending the plays. But if he can get a little bit more protection, a little bit more time, you know, maybe we'll see some bigger shots downfield to some of those great wide receivers.
Yeah. I think, and I could be projecting as a Bills fan, but I do think you guys still feel like one wide receiver short. I think Booty has been really good. I think Pop Douglas, no pun intended, has popped at certain times. But like, and again, I've experienced this as a Bills fan. When you're playing in the playoffs and people are going to bracket your best weapon, which right now is Diggs, they're going to find a way to take away Henry because that's what good defenses always do in the playoffs. Feels like you need another option. This is the issue that Miami has suffered from so long, where they've got a great top two set of weapons, but then they never develop the third option. It's not going to be one of the running backs for you guys because, as we have said, McDaniels is kind of committed to his ways. I think Jacoby Myers, if he were to be someone that you guys would add back to the roster, I think could be really good. And Chris Olave, who is a target for a lot of Bills fans on the internet. I think if you guys find a way to bring in Olave, he is young Stephon Diggs. You roll those two guys out as your Z and X receivers, your C and slot receivers. You're going to be a problem for a lot of teams, man. And I think you've got the cap space Olave, to do it.
Olave's one concussion away from being Antonio Brown. I know what I'm saying?
I get it.
I brought up this name, I think the last time you had me on. Efton Chisholm III is a player I would love for the Patriots to elevate right into the rotation. He's very Julian Edelman-esque as a lighter weight, shorter receiving option. Definitely showed flashes during preseason and throughout camp. And so that's a name I would like to see. You know, Kyle Williams, obviously, you know, I already brought that name up, but Efton Chisholm III, I think, is someone that the Patriots could utilize in the passing game to great effect. So that's what I want to see.
Wow. I like that. It would be cool. It would be cool if a guy named Efton Chisholm became like a household name. You know, kids are wearing like Efton jerseys and stuff like that. It'd be pretty amazing.
And again, the number of nicknames and double entendres that can be produced off of his name is just limitless. And I think that's what we need, in our household conversations.
100%. You guys could probably use a cover linebacker as well. You're a little susceptible in the middle of the field. Again, not that the Bills took advantage of any of the downhill crashing the run game that Spillane and Tavai were doing, but it does feel like you guys could use a better coverage backer back there. But honestly, we're just nitpicking at this point. I mean, other than to me, I do think raising the floor of talent in the wide receiver room should be a priority for you guys. Outside of that, you're pretty solid where you need to be. And again, as long as Drake May is driving this car that is this Patriots team and the schedule is what it is, I mean, you guys, unless something devastating happens injury-wise, I mean, it's really wide open for you all.
A question for you. You know, the Bills are coming off a couple hard losses. What do you want to, like, number one, what do you want to see the team do to turn this thing around, to right the ship, and get back on track?
I think they got to take the threat of the Patriots seriously. And I'm not just saying that because this is a you featuring podcast. I was watching that game against the Patriots, and the Bills from staff to player legitimately look surprised that the Patriots were as good as they were showing out. And I would have liked to have thought that that game would have been a wake-up call for them, but then they absolutely laid an egg against Atlanta as well. I think there is got to, I think, and there is this conspiracy amongst Bills Mafia that this is how the Bills are. This is why the Bills are actually struggling and Joe Brady looks like he can't call plays because they want to Chiefs it, right? The Chiefs, even though the offensive struggle has struggled over the past couple of years, they have been known to like put really bad film on for the regular season because they just feel like the playoffs are assured for them. And then, and they do it every year, Andy Reid rolls out something absolutely spectacular and obnoxious in the playoffs, right? That you've never seen them put on film in the regular season. There was a thought that there is a thought amongst Bills Mafia that that's what the Bills are doing. I don't know that that's necessarily true, but I do think I got the sense for the first time in that Pats game that they thought they were going to have an easier time with the division than you guys presented. So the first thing I want to see is I want to see them in a competitive mode again. Like even some of the, I just watched you guys, everybody high-fiving on the sideline, the energy you brought to the table, even in winning times, I haven't seen that this season from this Bills squad. A lot of this feels like it's been going through the motions. And that can be a very dangerous, complacent mentality for a team with the aspirations of the Bills to take. And quite frankly, we haven't earned what the Chiefs have earned because we don't have any Lombardi trophies in our trophy case, right? So I want to see a change in mentality, and I want to see them treat every game like it is their Super Bowl with that level of intensity. They're getting everybody's best shot. They are everybody's litmus test for the remainder of the season to measure against how good their opposing team might be. I want to see the Bills equal some of that fervor and equal some of that ferocity again. I know they've got it in them. Josh Allen's a dog, right? They just haven't shown it yet this season. And then they need to live up to the fact that they have not drafted and signed a lot of natural talent, a lot of athletic talent or superstar talent to this roster. Brandon Bean has done a great job of fattening up the middle class of like B-, B-, B-plus players on this roster. Your Terrell Bernards, your Christian Benford, your Greg Rousseau's. They have failed to, and I think part of this is philosophical, failed to go after, sign, draft, develop true athletic superstar game changers. I want to see that change of philosophy at the trade deadline, and I want them to go after someone like a Rashid Shaheed or a Chris Olave, like two natural separators down the field that they don't have. I want them to acknowledge that you can't just draft a basketball team of varying wide receiver sizes and expect that that's going to work, right? And then I want to see them, they are so scheme-like dedicated. I want to see them actually scheme for talent, not scheme for the playbook. Perfect example is Keon Coleman. And I said this on the last pod, it bears saying again, I'm ready to see Keon Coleman in the slot. I am sick of watching Keon Coleman at a physical disadvantage every time they line him up on an island on the outside, get pressed into oblivion. I want to see him in the slot because I do believe he's a talented wide receiver when he gets the ball in his hands. And if we put him in the slot, he is almost always going to be at a physical advantage for the first time in his career against an opposing slot or nickel DB. I want to see them move him around. I want to see them acknowledge that their scheme is not serving the talents of their players, and I want to see them better account for the talents of their players in the scheme.
So, yeah, no, I agree with that 100%. I think the Bills need to have an awakening and realize that Keon Coleman is currently the best offensive weapon, second to Josh Allen. Last night, we just saw Joe Flacco target Ja'Marr Chase 23 times over the course of a game and win in his first game as a Cincinnati Bengal. Mm-hmm. What was the recipe for success? Hyper target your best player and see what happens. Let him go up and make plays. And why wouldn't right. The Bills do the same thing?
All exactly. And Ja'Marr Chase got moved around all across those wide receiver slots, that the game-breaking play where Chase is about to get them in a field goal range, right? You've got Higgins lined up at the Z. You've got Chase in the slot. They put Higgins in motion. They dedicate a lot of attention to him on the Pittsburgh side. All of a sudden, they lose sight of Jamar Chase, who runs this quick in route over the middle, and then boom, catches the ball and he's gone up the seam. Why can't we do more of that? And what's more, why can't we put James Cook on the field for more than 49% of the snaps? Why can't we play Khalil Shakir, Keon Coleman, Dalton Kincaid more than 15 or 20 consecutive snaps? Like, why are we constantly like three snaps in, three plays off, three snaps in, two plays off? Why? I like Terrell Shavers, but so Terrell Shavers can get some run block reps in? Like, what are we doing? Like,
yeah, these are supposed to be elite professional athletes. You have Travis Hunter down in Jacksonville playing offense and defense. Like, your offensive elite players should be able to play more snaps than that, like consecutively.
Right. It is, and I've said this before, it's artificially constrained. It is voluntarily restrictive. And I think that's the big change in philosophy that I want to see. Scheme for your talent. Don't try to fit your talent into the scheme. And then, like, let guys cook. No pun intended. Like, it doesn't seem that hard. Put opposing defenses in conflict by making them account for your best players at all times. Like, if Jamar Chase got 49% of snaps, Bengals fans would be livid. That coaching staff would be fired. But we tend to get away with it in Buffalo. Why? I don't know. Because everybody eats, I guess. Oh, petty note. Maybe we can bond over this. Did you see what the Chiefs' new mantra is?
No.
I was listening to, what's the Kelce Brothers pod? Higher something or other? Heights?
Couldn't
New
tell
Heights.
You.
I think it's New
don't
Heights.
Don't care.
Yeah, don't care. So the Bills have had the mantra since Diggs left. Everybody eats, right? So the Kelce Brothers were talking about this on their pod, and the title of the pod was Examining the Everybody's Gotta Eat Mantra in Kansas City. And I was like, what? So I started scanning some social media stuff, and Xavier Worthy, who is known to hold a grudge against the Bills, saw a couple of posts from him that were like hashtag EGE. And I'm like, those sons of bitches, they are so petty. Those trolls in Kansas City, they took Everybody Eats and turned it into Everybody's Gotta Eat is the mantra for that pass catcher room. And I'm like, you unoriginal trolling sons of bitches. Like, it's not enough that you win every other Super Bowl, but you got to take something that means a lot to another fan base and pervert it and make it your own as some sort of like snarky subtweet against other NFL teams. Like, grow up, you children. My God.
Yeah. What would be your reaction if today Tyreek Hill became a Buffalo Bill? That says it all.
I mean, listen, and it's not because like he's a questionable human being, right? It's got nothing to do with that.
Questionable? That's a generous compliment.
it would feel though like you can find talent and you can find character. And I have been very critical of this Bills draft and signing philosophy because I think they think sometimes the two are mutually exclusive. I want to win, but I want to win in a way that's reflective of what I value about this team, what I value about the upstate New York area, what I love about this area and the city. And a guy like Tyreek Hill, as talented as he is, he doesn't reflect that for me. And that might seem too pie in the sky, especially for a fan of a team that's never won one. But like, I want to do it, but I want to do it the right way. You can't go from be good, do good, God bless, go Bills to whatever Tyreek Hill is and feel good about winning that way.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Cool.
Yeah, man. All right. Listen, I'm fresh out of stuff I want to talk about the Pats.
I'm sure I've put you through enough pain and torture, dude, throughout the last 30 minutes. So.
It's been torture on my soul. Real quick though, you guys have the Titans coming up. Mike Vrabel revenge game. Titans just fired their most recent head coach, Brian Callahan. They're now working with an interim head coach. Real quick, does Vrabel run up the score on the Titans to the point where they have to retire as a franchise?
I don't know. I feel as though this could be a sneaky, like, win.
Don't talk like Bills fans. Don't talk like Bills fans. Have confidence in your generational QB and your top of the market coach.
So I watched.
Say it's going to be 50-0.
I watched a Vrabel interview from this week where this was brought up about, like, you know, whether this is personal for him or anything like that. And, you know, he basically brushed it off and he's like, I'm a Patriot. Like, you know, it's nothing. Water under the bridge, like respect for the organization, you know, wish him nothing but the best, all that sort of stuff, the political stuff. But then I wonder, like, deep down, if he's like, no, I'm going to absolutely eviscerate these. Like, I'm going to demoralize them. I'm going to make them, like, really question, whether or not they want to play football in the NFL. So I think it's going to be a really fun game to watch. So I'm looking forward to it. But at the same time, with trepidation, with some anxiety, not knowing, you know, sort of, or maybe fearful of how it could go.
If the Patriots score less than 40 points and give up more than 3, I would be legitimately surprised. I really would. We'll revisit this. We'll text as the game is going on this weekend. But yeah,
definitely. Yeah, we will. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Listen, Brandon, as always, thank you for stepping up and being on the pod. We appreciate it. We wish the best for you and your family, just not the best for your Patriots. For all of you listening at home, like, share, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We're on YouTube, Apple, and Spotify. And as always, go Bills.
Go Pats.